Sit. It's a longish story, but I'll try to stick to the highlights.
This is the Extra Hot Grade Podcast, episode 509 for the week of April 29th, 2024. I am Mirror Metro Pass David T. Cole, and I'm here with Cat Counter Sarah D. Bunting.
51, 50, oh shit.
Coastal Witch Tara Ariano.
It's a vibe.
And Hipster Butcher Dan Casino.
Need a surrogate mother figure? You can call me June Cleaver.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a professor, he's a game maker, you've heard him with us many times. It's Dan Casino!
Dan!
Damn you, Casino!
Yay!
Got a lot.
Welcome back, Dan.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Thrilled to have you to talk about Dead Boy Detectives, in which Charles Roland, Jaden Reverie, and Edwin Payne, George Rexdrew, as we meet them, have been colleagues running a detective agency together. But you might have a hard time finding it because they have both been dead for decades, and they only take cases from fellow ghosts, except for when there are exceptions. That all changes when a tiny Victorian girl tells them about the troubles her best friend Crystal, Cassius Nelson, a living human medium, has been having. Against Edwin's better judgment, they take the case and end up with more than they've bargained for. The series is based on the graphic novels Neil Gaiman and Matt Wagner spun off from Gaiman's graphic novel series, The Sandman. The show was developed by Steve Yockey, who previously brought us The Flight Attendant. All 8 episodes dropped on Netflix last week. We might talk about any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Dan, should our listeners watch Dead Boy Detectives?
Sure.
Sarah.
I'm not going to, but you can.
Dave.
I really enjoyed it. I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes, too. I liked it much more than I expected. Let's get into it, because I'm a little bit surprised by Dan's sure, but let's start here. Graphic novels are a format you engage with a lot. You've undoubtedly seen many titles that you have read be adapted for the screen. What are some of the typical pitfalls these adaptations might run into, and did Dead Boy Detectives avoid them or not, in your opinion?
So the biggest pitfall you get when you're adapting a graphic novel is trying to be just too slavish to what was in the story. And this is actually the problem that was faced with the Sandman series on Netflix, is they were trying to do the first 7 issues of Sandman, which are not the best part of Sandman. Like, why are you doing these stories? This is not what anyone wants. And this series actually is very different than the Dead Boy Detective comics. The biggest difference being that the Dead Boy Detectives in the comics are like 11 and 12 years old. They're like little kids. And this one, they have aged them up so they can get real horny with it. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. Because what do the kids want? Content they can ship. When do they want it? Always. And that's what this is giving us.
I said to Tarek, this show reminded me of The Magicians insofar that it was, you got some magic and you got some supernatural and everybody's horny.
Yeah.
And look, this is what the children want. And that's why this is what they learned from Neil Gaiman adaptations when they did Good Omens. And they said, oh, what if the two lead characters were like in a romance? And people loved it. And so the creator of this show said, oh, well, let's just do that for everything. Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be more of a procedural, like, oh, it's a dead boy every week. And I'm like, oh, good, British procedural. I can watch this with my wife. She'll love this. And we watched the first episode. We're like, oh, that's what they're, oh dear. Okay, that's very different. And so it's not the sort of cozy detective thing I was looking at, but it's fine. That's not my thing necessarily, but you know, I think it was well done.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, I think this reaction of Dan's probably mirrors yours. Speak on that.
It does. It was well done. It's just not enough for me that I'm going to keep going with it, but I didn't think it was bad. There is, for me, a danger. I've said this about other Gaiman adaptations. Like, Gaiman is not for me. Like, his existence, thumbs up.
Somewhere he's phew.
I know, right? Well, he has interacted with my content before, so he didn't have to do that. I always appreciated it. Seems like a good egg. There's like a twee line for me that he tends to cross pretty frequently enough that like I just don't like Gaiman content is not for me. Mm-hmm. This was clever and the performances were very likable. The issue for me is like this concept and the sort of world that I knew going into it that had already been built. That was kind of the whole that was it for me. Like, once I understood the concept, it's an extremely clever concept that I didn't need to continue with to see what they did with it. It was just like, this is clever. It's a little, you know, it looks like it's shot through a sepia screen, which is annoying, but that's streaming content for you. But like, it looks nice. It's well done. But the concept was everything for me. And it just did not quite make me curious enough to continue through the whole series. But I'm not mad at it. And I don't think it's mediocre. It's just not for me.
I was on my guard against tweeness as well. And I think, you know, it's impossible for it not to seep in. But I did think they stayed on the right line of it for me, for example, in the second episode when we meet the dandelion sprites and get to see their personality once they are captured. I thought this has kind of an acid tone. I appreciate what they're doing with this. And yeah. Dave, this is not necessarily your thing on paper either, but you liked it. Talk more about why it worked for you.
I would agree with Dan that, like, if you weren't expecting something in quotes horny, then, you know, you might be taken aside from it. But for me, it's not like horny in the same way as like maybe The Magicians was horny. It's more like an exploration of horniness, which sounds hoity-toity. As the series goes on, it's more of a people grasping with their sexuality and through supernatural characters that surround them. But I thought actually the whole season as a whole was very tight, because even though each episode is billed as a separate case of some sort, you know, there is somebody they have to help, a whole bunch of quests that all need to happen in a very small area, which is this town in Washington. But I thought that it flowed together nicely. Like, they were having these little adventures, but you never felt like it was just bookended by some myth arc stuff. Like, everything felt cohesive, that they were having all eight different cases, or maybe seven different cases, but then also we got a through fare all happening at the same time, which I appreciated, because a lot of shows end up doing that, which is, here's a little bit what's happening with the mystical overarching whatever. Here's a procedural bit, and then the last 3 minutes will be a reveal that will hopefully suck you into the next one. This one was written as a whole, I find, and I think it shows in the production of it. And I did also appreciate the judicious use of Sandman nods. You know, it obviously takes place in the Netflix Sandman universe, and there was a, you know, cameo by Death in the first episode, and another one of the gods later on, and little things here and there. But I also felt like the show itself and the tone fit well with the comic book version of Sandman, in that it was at times disgusting, at times touching, at times fey. You know, I think they captured it while not making it another Netflix Sandman, which, as Dan said, really suffered from just trying to be the comic book and not even the good part of the comic book.
What you say, Dave, is like, oh, they've got the episodic, and I think they've blended very well with the overarching threat. It's just Buffy, right? Like, this is very much a new version of Buffy.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, we got a Scooby gang, including those sprites, which I love, the dandelion sprites. And there's the overarching threat, and they have the case every week, and all the cases are metaphors for something. And I think they do that very well. I mean, I think look, there's reasons why we might not want to watch Buffy, and Buffy might not appeal to the children today. And so this is a version of that for those people.
He keeps saying the children.
I just got finished teaching class for 4 hours. I am dealing with the children all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dan, I'm pretty sure you're the youngest of all of us. So flippity flu.
Yeah, I agree about the Buffy reference. There are a lot of ways to portray magic on screen. You know, we've seen many. And for me, this one, I thought, split the difference well between research-based exposition, which was also a Buffy feature, of course, and then just getting on with shit and not explaining it. Like, here's a bag. It can hold an infinite amount of things. Let's just, now you know, and that's what this bag's deal is, and stuff like that. Mirror travel, talking to cats, the disguises, like all of
that. Why can you stay on floors, but you can go through walls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
All the cats are Burt Young. Sure.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated that balance. Sarah, what did you think?
It did some things of its own while also like borrowing from this long tradition that we've just been talking about like televised supernatural procedural stuff. So like sometimes a like short-term demonic possession is like, it's usually going to be parallel to or metaphor for sexual assault or like consent issues more broadly. And there's no reason to change that or make the sort of visual grammar for it different. But then other things, they were just kind of like, yes, there's this bag that we can literally fit anything in. Just go with it because you have to. And I think it says something in the show's favor that you are inclined almost immediately to trust the show and suspend various systems of disbelief in order to go with it, because it is very sort of like likable and trustworthy as a narrative, not to be too like woo-woo about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when we have a professor on. The apple polisher has to show off. Anyway, I mean, I like the show and I think it's good at what it does. And that includes taking what it can use from the, you know, TV witchery library and then using its own stuff from its own universe. So yeah, I think it's good.
Did you get to the True Crime Murder House episode?
No.
Oh, okay. That was a standout episode for me because I thought it was like genuinely upsetting and creepy for a show that was like kind of bouncy until then.
Mm-hmm.
There's a murder house where the dad had killed the rest of the family with an axe one night, and they come to it because the house is going to be demolished decades later with an absolutely fabulous use of Owner of a Lonely Heart as the background music for the whole murder happening.
Wow. Okay.
They're caught in this loop because of like just how incredibly upsetting and visceral and shocking the murder was. So they've been like being murdered probably like 200-300 times a day for 30 years in this loop. And then they arrive and they're trying to figure out how to break this loop. But I'm not going to hear that song ever again in the same way, because like they really match up like the song with what's going on in the house when the dad is going crazy. And then, you know, there's some other stuff on top of that. But yeah, it is Buffy-esque. It really kind of does feel like if Buffy was made today, it would be much more like this, I suppose. But I thought Crystal was the weak link in her story, mostly because it all takes place away from everybody else, because her discovery stuff usually happens in like this world within a world kind of thing happening. So it was the least compelling part of it. But I love the two leads. I thought they were great. And the cast of characters surrounding them are all great. The Night Nurse is great. Although I thought Night Nurse was a Marvel character. Is there multiple Night Nurses around, Dan?
Yeah, there apparently are. But Night Nurse is a Night character, so is a Marvel character. So yeah, who knows? It's not copyright. You can't copyright the idea of a Night Nurse.
Right.
I was surprised at how sometimes legitimately scary it is, too. Especially that episode is for real. And then stuff happens like much, much later in the season, too.
But then there's like really stupid parts. Like for some reason, the thing that cracked me up is there's one episode where this is really angry lighthouse ghost. He used to be like the lighthouse keeper, and now he's a ghost and he's mad because hipster ghosts is hanging around his lighthouse now and killing themselves, or, you know, hipsters hanging around his lighthouse, killing themselves and then becoming loitering ghosts. But he just runs in the room super angry, yelling about all the hipster ghosts around his lighthouse. So like, there's just a lot happening in this show, but it's blending it all in a way that I just really enjoy it. All right, it's time to go around the dial talking about what we're watching on TV lately. Our first up is Tara.
Hello. When we got the first two seasons of HBO Max's, now just Max's, Hacks in 2021 and 2022, I had the luxury of just being able to enjoy them without ever having to have a take. I was never assigned to review them. Sometimes when I'm not required to be critical, I'm not. So when season two came out and our friend Catherine made a lot of excellent points in a Vulture discussion that we'll link to with two of her colleagues about how low its stakes can be as a show and how excessively affectionate its writers can be about its protagonist, Deborah Vance, played by Jean Smart, I had to agree with her intellectually while still enjoying the show as a regular viewer. But now I write a lot for a comedy site, and obviously this is a show I now had to engage with professionally. So the problem with saying anything about season three, which premieres on Thursday, I have seen the whole thing, is that Max is holding back so many details about it, which means I can't tell you what parts of its story it's doing well or badly, what roles all of the new guest stars that it has announced are doing on the show. I guess I can tell you, since the trailer gave it away, that Deborah's reuniting with her much younger writer, Ava, played by Hannah Einbinder, who Deborah fired affectionately in the season two finale. I just can't say what they're working on together. It's annoying. So I'll just say this because it was too small to mention in my review, which we'll also link to. It's not even really a plot point. Ava and Deborah in the premiere end up in a hotel elevator together. And when Deborah gets off on her floor, Ava sees what room Deborah goes to and she knocks on her door. And the reason Ava sees is that Deborah's in a room within sight of the elevator. Deborah is someone who has been established as loving the finer things in life. An entire episode earlier in the run, it revolves around her sending Ava to buy a ceramic piece to complete a salt and pepper shaker set, which is something that she collects at a 5-figure price tag. Deborah Vance would never stay in a hotel room that close to the elevator because it would be loud all the friggin' time. She would make them move her. I don't even care if she's old enough to have hearing loss. For the appearance of the thing, she would not stay there. I know she's there so that Ava can see which room is hers and then go and knock on the door afterwards. Figure out another way to get that in the story. This is not credible. That aside, the show gives itself a reason to exist in season three. It sets up a season four in the finale. It's still entertaining if you don't think about it too hard. So if you don't have to think about it too hard, you shouldn't, because it's a good show and it has a lot of good jokes. Dave, you also watched this with me.
I did, and I guess we can't talk about what the guest stars did. Is that an embargo thing?
You can say who they are, but you can't say what they did.
Okay. I recently found out that when the Stephen Tobolowsky thing that happens on the show, this would be annoying to listen to, I'm sorry, is actually a thing that has contributed to people in Hollywood, that's a thing that happened in Hollywood. Yes.
Interesting.
The actor of a recent documentary about himself is the person involved in real life.
Okay.
Yes.
Fascinating.
I will let you know offline.
Okay. Anyway, watch Axe. Yeah. I wrote a review, as I mentioned. I also did a roundup with another show that Sarah's going to talk about in a minute and that we will all be talking about on Friday. So I will hold my next plug until we get there.
Mr. Dan Cassino, what have you been watching recently?
So I was going to pretend to be one of the cool people and talk about X-Men 97, which I'm really enjoying, but Will Hines beat me to it. It's very good. If you have any affection at all for it, or if you don't, because I was actually a little too old to really enjoy X-Men 97 when it first came out. I actually love this revival. It's great.
But you're not that cool.
I am not nearly that cool. In fact, what I've been watching, the thing I've been most excited about watching, the show I watch when it first comes on, and I love every second of it, is the current season of This Old House. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it is currently filming. The current season is in my town of Glen Ridge, New Jersey. It is a town that is 1 square mile, has 7,000 people, 20% of all the functioning gas lamps in the entire United States. Ooh. It is a weird small town, and they are doing a giant renovation in our hometown. We've actually already seen it. They made a big deal of it. You know, there was no secret. The town just sent out an email saying, here's the address of where it is. You can come and gawk. Here's what I like about This Old House. It is the only Home Improvement show that is realistic in that other Home Improvement shows, we get you in and out in an hour. No, this is 16 episodes per season. They're working at one house the whole time. It takes them a year. What's the budget on this? They don't mention it. The reason they don't mention it is because the budget for every house they do is $1 to $2 million. They are doing an insane amount of renovation. It is hypnotic. It is beautiful because the craftsmanship is amazing. They're going to spend 10 minutes showing you how you replace an old clay pipe with a new pipe without actually digging a new hole, or how you put a new footing on a porch. And it's hypnotic and it's beautiful. The craftsmanship is amazing. It's funny to me that it's sponsored by Home Depot, because the whole point of the show is, no, you can't actually do any of this. You need to hire Tom Silva to do it for you. You can't possibly do it yourself. But it's beautiful. It's processy. It hits close to home for me this season. And it is the only show where I watch it at the end of the 25 minutes. I go, oh, is that it? Is that all we get this week? Oh, and then I have to wait for the next episode to come up. If you like Home Improvement shows, this is the best possible and most realistic Home Improvement shows. And even if you don't like Home Improvement shows, this is a worthwhile social project, because all this is doing is taking money from the financial sector of the economy and giving it to hardworking New England craftsmen. And I think we can all get behind that.
Sounds like Buffy. I guess if you asked me a couple of years ago if we would be highlighting This Old House on the podcast, I'd probably say no, but that was before I met you, Dan. So
I'm expanding your horizons,
absolutely.
Dave.
Absolutely. All right, Dan, what do you have to plug?
So if you are in the New York, New Jersey metro area, you can catch me on Channel 9 on NJ Now every Sunday at 12 o'clock. I'm on every other week on that show. And of course, if there's breaking news, you can always find me on Pix 11, mostly talking about our former president.
Sarah D. Bunting, what have you been watching that you wish to tell everybody about?
It's not like Buffy, I'll tell you that right now. It's Baby Reindeer, and the Netflix algorithm was recommending this to me for a couple of days, and I was like, whatever, because the Netflix algorithm, like, because of stuff that I have to prep for Extra Hot Great and for the canon, like, both Hulu and Netflix, like, I've just completely jammed their radar, that they're like, do you think you might like Bluey? And I'm like, well, everyone likes Bluey, so yes, but what does this have to do with anything? So I ignored it, but then Tara recommended that I watch Baby Reindeer, which I probably don't need to give you a plot summary because everybody has been reviewing it and raving about it, but Richard Gadd turned the story of getting stalked after, unrelatedly, getting assaulted into a play that has now become this Netflix series. It is remarkably well done across the board, well acted, the pacing is great, but the most remarkable thing about the show to me is the way it depicts trauma and the complexity of trauma and just post-trauma behavior. We don't get over things. Healing is not a straight line. We all know that intellectually, but we almost never see it in scripted material, possibly because the purpose of scripted material is to draw the lines that real life doesn't want drawn and that, like, IRL quote narrative resists. Donnie, which is Richard Gadd's character, is all over the place emotionally, unable to manage honesty with himself or in his fledgling relationship. He can't resist engaging with his stalker, Martha. He can't stop despising himself long enough to act in his own self-interest. It is often infuriating and dispiriting to watch because you want Donnie to agree with you, the viewer, that he deserves some peace. But the series is just making room for this imperfect victim because that's what all victims are. And it's sort of heartening in that way, even though there isn't really a happy ending or an unambiguous ending to the show. It's not hopeless, but it's sort of unclear how things are going to turn out in various situations for Donnie when the credits roll. And it's like, weirdly, both extremely cinematic and evocative, but also, like, on a narrative level, it's not cinematic at all. Kind of ironic given how well-crafted this unsentimental but also compassionate portrayal of survival is, but it was really a stunner, like, just unbelievably well-executed and net, I would have to say, one of those experiences that was like, this is really an absolutely A-plus property, but like Dear Zachary, that's a wrap on me watching it ever again. Like, it was, like, gorgeously, horribly done in that, like, capital R romantic sublime sense. So, good rec, Dara.
You're welcome.
And I, you know, but also it was, like, funny sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he's funny. He's good at this. He's a good writer. And so just, like, the whole kind of 360 breadth of his experience and getting to just see all of it and that that wasn't, like, apologized for or sanded down is really something and really rare. And I wrote about it on Best Evidence. Like, technically, it's not true crime. But for that reason, it's able to be very true about the crimes that it's sort of talking about figuratively and with some details changed. One last note on this. Apparently, the Reddit verse has really gone into overdrive trying to figure out who he's, quote, really talking about, to the point where he and a couple of the members of the cast had to be like, can we
stop.
Not?
Yeah.
It's a composite and this isn't your job. Like, stop it. So if you were doing that, stop it. Thanks. Anyway, like I said, I wrote about it at bestevidence.fyi. We will link that in the show notes. And coming up this week, we have a book review from my esteemed colleague, Eve Beatty. Look back at Your Wrong About's O.J. Simpson series for paid subscribers. And our esteemed colleague, Susan Howard, will be predicting who's going to win the Edgar Award for Best Fact Crime. So check it out, once again, bestevidence.fyi, where our esteemed colleague Dan Cassino often writes reviews for us, which is really nice of him.
All right, settle in. This is happening in the coming weeks on the Extra Hot Great podcast universe. This Friday, we will be covering The Contestant, It's a documentary about a guy who became a contestant in a Japanese game show, and nobody saw him for a year. It was weird.
For more than a year, for 15 months.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then, next EHG Prime, that's 5/10, we got you an all-canon special. Following that up with the next extra, extra hot great, Star Maidens is a show I'm forcing Tara and Sarah to watch and discuss, another 70s British sci-fi gem, question mark? Mm-hmm. And then after that, on 5/11 on EHG Prime, we got a listener game time all ready to go for you. Extra, extra hot grade after that one is Interview with a Vampire Season 2. And then EHG Prime 5/12 will be the 8th show with a wonderful guest to be announced. Don't miss all of that. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon listener submission this week from Jessica. Take it away, Jessica.
Hey, Extra Hot Great. It's Jessica Lease. Today I'm submitting The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 19, One More, for induction into the canon. Let me kick this canon submission off with a disclaimer. I do not know if this is actually objectively good, or if I have Stockholm Syndrome opposed by 10 years of watching, writing, and podcasting about The Walking Dead, a show that has overstayed its welcome by approximately 4 years and 6 spinoff series. By fall 2019, the flagship show had lost 3/4 of its audience, but thanks to a new showrunner and writers, I swear, it was getting as good again as it was in the first few seasons. But then, just as the season 10 finale went into post-production, 2020 happened. While full production was delayed, they made a handful of bonus episodes with limited cast and crew to tide us over until they could resume the main story. That's right, 6 bottle episodes telling stories that aren't necessary to the overall continuity. What could go wrong? The best thing you can say about Season 10C on the whole is that it's experimental. There's a brand new love interest for Daryl Dixon that feels cribbed from a teenager's fanfic on AO3, and an episode that is revealed to have taken place entirely in a character's mind. Probably fun to write, but maybe less fun to watch in many cases. But sometimes you swing for the fences, you knock it out of the goddamn park. One More should not work. But thanks to the writers and actors' incredibly clear vision of who these characters are, coupled with an absolutely bonkers pair of twists, it 100% does. It is by far my favorite episode of the last half of The Walking Dead, and it is easily in my top 5 Walking Dead episodes ever. Now, if you dropped off the show sometime back in Obama's second term, and I completely understand if you did, you don't actually need a lot of setup here. We're roughly 10 years into the zombie apocalypse. Aaron and Father Gabriel are out looking for supplies for their community, with not much luck so far. Now, although they've been on the show for 5 and 6 seasons, respectively, this is a pairing of characters that we haven't seen much of up to this point, which is crazy, because these two are great together from the jump, and after this episode, they're basically peas and carrots through the end of the series. Now, after several increasingly grim tableaus, Gabriel talks Aaron into scoping out one more spot before they pack it in. And they find a building that's not on the map, and it turns out to give them exactly the boost they need. That night, as the pair get to bonding over expensive whiskey and roast boar, they start philosophizing about the nature of humanity, as one does. Aaron, the eternal optimist, wishes things could go back to the way they were. Gabriel says they need to adjust to the new normal. This definitely hit different in 2021. Clip 1.
Evil people aren't the exception to the rule. They are the rule. Well, now I'm sober.
And then, as The Walking Dead so often does, it lifts them up just to beat them down again. In a world where you've been engaged in a brutal war with the dark side of humanity, and also zombies, for a decade, what could actually remain that's legitimately scary? A motherfucking T-1000, that's what. Robert Patrick, as Maze, brings true menace to a character that might be kind of tropey in the hands of a worse actor. Now, so much of watching TV, when you write and podcast about it, is informed by what you hear about what's happening on the other side of the fourth wall. And if an actor gets a DUI, gets fired from their show, for instance, you know the character's going to die. Shout out to Lost. But the true genius of this episode is that it makes you forget all of that. On a show where everyone is constantly cheating death and no major characters have been killed off in roughly 2 years, it's got to be pretty hard to make the viewers believe someone could actually die. And somehow this creepy dude's modified Russian roulette does it anyway. Now, even though you know the episode is filler, and it's highly unlikely you'd make it the swan song for 2 actors who are single digits on the call sheet, the tension here is still so palpable that you start to wonder if maybe they would. Maybe 2020 was too much for either Ross Marquand or Seth Gilliam, and they saw an easy exit. But then, as the last chamber in the gun comes up, it's definitely loaded, Gabriel uses his spiritual gifts to talk Maze down from the ledge, and it actually works. Clip 2.
You don't have to be like this. There is another way. Our community is real. It's full of people who were lost and found their way back. You can too. We can help you. If you'll let us.
Father, I don't believe you.
Because that's who we are.
So at this point, you wonder, when did I miss the news that Robert Patrick was joining the cast? Now, I guess it's possible that Maze has been rehabilitated. All he needed was someone to extend the hand of friendship. I mean, Negan's doing that at that point, so sure, why not? So Maze lays down his arms, prepares to embrace life again, and the message here is that even at the end of the world, redemption is possible. JK, no, it's not. Gabriel's view of humanity is as dim as it always was. He sold this speech to everyone in the room, Maze, Aaron, even us, only to turn it back around to his original point. People are inherently terrible. Bludgeon the psychos with spiky ball hand. Clip 3.
It's okay. We're good.
Are we?
We couldn't take him with us. He killed his brother's family.
Let's just go.
So, this is where we left it. Dainu. A self-contained story, well told, well acted, with a twist. But that's not the only fake-out of the episode. I've always felt that The Walking Dead is at its best when it goes completely over the top. From the band of villains who wear dried zombie faces on their actual faces, to a zombie orchestra consisting of reanimated corpses welded to musical instruments and groaning in time to Ravel's bolero, and yes, both of those things really happened. But I submit that this episode contains the most ludicrous, audacious thing the Walking Dead universe ever served up. Whenever this franchise continues to plod along at its worst, I find myself thinking, you know what I wish would happen right now? Twin Robert Patrick's. Although in fairness, Fear the Walking Dead tried its own twin twist right around this time, and it didn't really help. Now, is one more the platonic ideal of Walking Dead episodes? Not necessarily. But is it a gripping, dark, standalone tale that serves as a playground for three absolutely brilliant actors, and then spiky ball hands you in the face two times in a row? I submit that it is, and for that reason, I hope you'll consider putting it in the canon.
Thank you, Jessica. Dan, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
Sure. So the reason I chose this was I saw season 10, episode 19. That's got to be close to the end of the show, right? So I thought this might be the last episode. And The Walking Dead had my favorite last episode of the comic book series ever done, where they were the same thing the TV show was doing in the comic book. They're kind of found a civilization and they do it and then it gets attacked and something and they go do a new one. And the creator, Robert Kirkman, just got fed up with it and then unexpectedly canceled it, actually made a bunch of fake issues and then canceled it in the middle of the run with one episode set 20 years in the future that was a legal procedural that was nothing to do with the rest of the series. And it was wonderful and bonkers. And I was thinking, hey, I wonder how they ended the show. So I thought this might be the last episode of the show, which is why I picked it. And so I'd watched The Walking Dead when it came out. I watched the first three seasons and then I stopped because I'd had enough and I'm not into Fangoria nonsense, and Walking Dead loves doing Fangoria nonsense. And so I was curious to see what they did with it. And, you know, I gotta say, it worked on me. I thought this was a great examination of the themes of the show, right? The whole point of the show is after the apocalypse, are there still good people? Is it worth living? And the message of the show is community makes it worth living. If you got community, then you can live. And there are good people left, but only if they're part of your community, and you have to be very hard-hearted about everyone else. And, you know, so it deals in a mature way with the questions that the show is raising in a way that most of the show doesn't, when it's just like, ha-ha, zombie kill-kill. And the fact that it's dealing in a mature way with it, interesting. And also when Robert Patrick came out, I thought, oh, I remember him from X-Files. He could totally just be the new guy on here. That's interesting. And the fact that they did have the twist, great. Now, was the whole thing labored? Yes. I mean, the idea of the reverse Russian roulette was ridiculous. I mean, we have to assume this guy is mentally damaged in this very specific, weird way, but it is in furtherance of the themes. And, you know, I'm a sucker for really an exploration of the themes of a show, even if the plot of it isn't exactly what I'd want to be. That said, also, it had a lot of moments of levity not brought up in the presentation. I like that they got stuck in the mud and they're just like, oh, mud and dry cleaning doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what I want to see. That's how I would feel. Then again, I would not be wandering around Georgia in the summer after the apocalypse in my priest uniform.
If the zombie apocalypse happened, let's say next week,
mm-hmm.
would you hunker down in your house, or would you try to quickly take over the this old house renovated house?
Great question.
They have an amazing basement down there, and you should see their setup. Yeah, definitely. Okay. We're taking over this old house. Yeah.
Okay. Dan's called dibs.
I thought that this was an amazing episode. I think I quit once it became clear that they were not going to kill off the Sarah Wayne Kelly's character in timely enough fashion. I quit at that point. So might have been three episodes in, but I would occasionally come back to it to see what they were doing. But I think it, like Jessica said, has been since Obama was president where I interacted with any part of this franchise, maybe Fear the Walking Dead for this podcast. So I am not sure if this episode had the same effect on people who kept up with it longer or the whole time as it did on me. That I thought that it was strikingly well composed and shot, maybe a little like melodramatic in some of the shot composition, but the first like 10 or 15 minutes of the episode, just like the way that the land is taking back buildings and bodies, aerial shots where it's like this couple on the mattress and then the words "save me" still really quite bright on the roof, "save us," I think it says. Traveling through this horrible but also at the same time beautiful landscape, these two men who have this very lived-in feeling relationship to the point where they're not necessarily talking that much. Like from this franchise, I would have expected a lot of unnecessary late stage procedural, like this is where we're going and what we're doing, in a way that these characters would not have to speak to each other because they've been in this buddy movie for however long together. And that did not occur. So maybe I was like more impressed than someone who had been a regular viewer, and this was kind of like coin of the realm, especially Gilliam's acting, which, you know, I watched The Wire, but like he's stunning in this episode. He's so good. As Dan Cassino pointed out, they're also treating with the themes of the series, which is like, this is the fight to save humanity, the species, but it's also the fight to save humanity, the quality of being a person, having compassion, looking out for each other. The way that they do that in this is quite, for this show, elliptical and poetical and beautiful. The Russian roulette scenes, I mean, this is just such a at gunpoint captor cliche of TV and film. I felt that despite the twists, which were effective, that it could have moved along a bit. Good casting, good acting. This episode did stay with me after watching it. And I think that it's definitely doing a lot of things that it might have seemed like this series and this series of franchises had forgotten how to do. But this was like a little movie. It was like beautiful and affecting. I didn't feel the need to continue, which is often a criterion for me for the canon. But in this case, I think its ability to be self-contained and effective in that way is an argument for it. Excellent idea, excellent presentation, and sort of on a meta level, excellent work by this showrunning team to kind of use the tools that we had at that point in the no longer before time to keep up with these characters and see what storytelling they could do in this universe with the strictures of lockdown and so on. So always nice to hear your voice, Jessica. And yeah, that's all I got. Great presentation and episode. Who's next?
I'll go next. This was a great presentation. And Jessica touched on a lot of the points that I felt as watching it as someone who had drifted away from the show a long time ago. We watched it and then we stopped and then we heard it got good again and came back and watched it for a couple of seasons. Then we stopped again. So I didn't know what was going to happen. And in the context of a canon presentation, you sort of have in the back of your mind, like, what is the thing that happens in this episode? Like she said, you know, is this, did she pick it because this is one of the ones where a major character dies? Mm-hmm. And obviously that seems like, you know, it's possible at any time for all the usual Walking Dead reasons. But then when we get to the Russian roulette scene, you truly don't know what's going to happen. Not only when each of them pulls the trigger, but when each of them takes the gun back, like, is this going to be the time that they decide they're going to point it at the other? instead of at themselves. Right. Completely robbed of context, except from what we've seen in this episode, which was a lot. That adds to the richness of this for someone that's just dropping in. I realize that's not who they make the show for, but it still worked on that level, I thought.
Right, exactly.
I don't know how many times I have to keep saying, I don't know what you people are trying to survive for. Every single bit of this looks miserable. What are you doing? It's been years. Like, you're walking around, you're getting muddy, you're breaking into stores that have already been looted. Like, this is insane. What kind of a life is
and
this?
And now that they have found the last remaining bottle of what apparently is Pappy Van Winkle, like, you're done. You're burnt. Like, take the gun, turn it on yourself.
Right.
There's nothing left.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That aside, I agree about Seth Gilliam's performance in particular. And like Jessica said, how the many levels on which it has to work and the many levels on which it definitely does work. And, you know, the aftermath, Aaron's shock, all of that is great. I felt like it went one scene too long. I don't think we needed to see it again or see it extend for, you know, we found our way to the water tower one more time. Like, there already was a one more. It was the other maze upstairs. Like, we got it. But other than, you know, maybe a tiny bit of editing that could have been done, this was a really interesting character study, and it was a pleasure to watch. Dave.
All right. So I agree that it was interesting character study, but there is like a meta problem with this episode for me, which is, and it's a symptom of the internet age, which is if you follow news at all, like, you know, Robert Patrick isn't going to be on The Walking Dead. You know, this character isn't going to be outside of this episode. You know that when somebody famous shows up in the first third of Law and Order, there's a very good chance and he's dismissed. There's a very good chance they're going to circle back on him and he's going to be some weird creepo that actually killed all the ladies. So there's a bit of like media literacy problem with some of these episodes, whereas you're like, you know what's going on in casting and just like what people are working on in a general sense, you can start to fill in the blanks on what's going to happen here. And as soon as this episode popped up and it was like Robert Patrick's in the credits, like, well, I know he wasn't, you know, ever going to be on this show in a regular sense. So he's going to pop in and pop out. So when it came to the big first twist, which is actually at the moment he is going to embrace community, he's going to get beamed in the head with a mace arm. I wasn't shocked. I didn't know exactly the mechanism for which he was going to buy it at the minister's hand, but I kind of saw that one coming. I didn't see the terrible second maze upstairs. He also had to play Russian roulette once upon a time, and he shot his whole family during his game. Robert Patrick twin reveal, except he was like, he had like the worst pasted on beard and long hair.
Fraggle maze. Yeah.
And so for me, this episode was like, I kind of saw it coming and I do appreciate it as a character study, but Jesus Christ, it's been 10 seasons of this. Like, we've had this every, like, oh no, turns out it was man. Like, that's this the whole series. Episode by episode. The real horror is us. So this was another one of those for me. And the fact that like the twist of it, like, you know, and he's a great actor and he plays villains really well. He had a nice stupid turn in Reacher recently, but I was not shocked in the least by what happened in the room. So for me, this one fell flat because of that. And it's a weird meta problem to have, you know, when you kind of know just because of who's in it and who's not in it, that you might be able to figure out what's going to happen at the end of it via Variety or the Hollywood Reporter kind of like general knowledge. But that was it for me. So this one just didn't really click for me on that level. I was not shocked. So now, follow-up question. Do I want to know what AO3 is?
Yeah, it's a fanfic website. Archive of Our Own. Yeah. It's the world's largest fanfic website.
I see. R-rated stuff?
If you want it, it's there.
Oh, I see. Okay. It's got everything. A little something for everybody.
It's got a little something for everybody. I was looking for This Old House fanfic. Apparently nothing, but you know, we'll try.
Yeah. It sounds like that might be something you should start, Dan. Oh, he's scribbling already. All right. Let's put this to the official vote. Mr. Dan Cassino, what say you? Canon worthy?
I say I.
Sarah DeBunding?
I also say I.
Yeah, same.
All right. I'm going to say no, but it don't matter. All right, by 3-1, that means The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 19, One More. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Crate Cannon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover the winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
Recently, the wonderful Melanie Lynskey has been having a great career on TV. She's in Yellow Jackets. She was in Candy. She was in The Last of Us for a pretty memorable episode. She recently gave an interview where she said her big career of the past few years would not be possible because her husband, Jason Ritter, has turned down major roles that he's been offered so that he can parent their daughter while his wife, Melanie Lynskey, works. And first of all, that's awesome. And second of all, I wanted to bring it up while Dan was here because this is a subject of scholarly research for him. What do you think of the Ritter-Lynskey marriage as a model for us all?
Look, it is the job of men who are not threatened by their wife's success to support their wife's success. And what we find is that when men are married to women who are more successful than they are, either they go farther left and become more supportive, or boy howdy, they go pretty far right. So I'm glad to see that they are going the way we would want them to.
All right, that's enough from Tara. What about you, Sarah? Loser of the week.
Oh, it's Peacock, because they are hiking their prices for the second time in 2 years. This time it's ostensibly ahead of the Summer Olympics.
Yes.
Surge in viewership. But I have a sub winner on that tip. Having read this and selected as the loser this week, I went to my Peacock account to see if I could maybe shave off a little money by going to an annual plan. They make that fucking impossible to figure out how to do. So I was like, well, fuck you, and quote, stormed off. At which time they were like, how about 6 months at 99 cents a month? So if you also storm off, I think their subscription bot will just slash the price by $5 a month. Once it goes back up, then you'll have to be at the new price level. But try it. You'll like it.
Speaking about screaming and trying to get points, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time.
Game time.
We mentioned this last week, but Dan Cassino wanted to bring a game to Game Time, and so he has. So we will let him take over in a second, but this is the second Game Time of the season. So what I thought is I would play Value Guess. So this is going to be a regulation game, even though not one of the EA Stew gang is actually leading this. So our scores currently are Tara with 0, Sarah with 1, Value Guess with 0. Dan Cassino, take it away.
All right, folks, it's time to go back to the days before Vatican II, because this game is called Traditional Latin Mash. See, I've had a genius idea to make any show critically acclaimed on a budget. See, the 1976 BBC miniseries I, Claudius is one of the most acclaimed shows ever made, and those cardboard sets didn't cost anything. Everything went to the Annunciation budget, and British actors work cheap. So what we're going to do is we're going to take other shows and match them up with I, Claudius to watch the awards roll in. In this game, I'll describe a show, miniseries, or TV movie that's been mashed up with I, Claudius. You have to name the resulting program in which the word I has been replaced with I, Claudius. So, for instance, if I told you that in a 2005 show, Claudius sits Britannicus and Claudia down to tell them about the wacky events that led to his marriage to Valeria Messalina, but surprise, he's really telling them that he wants to get together with Julia Agrippina, you know that show was...
How I, Claudius, Met Your Mother.
Yes. And that would get you 3 points. If you need more help, I can tell you the name of one of the actors in the series, other than Derek Jacobi, of course. But then a correct answer is only worth 1. You should also note that these British actors are very formal, so they break down contractions. I'll, for instance, in a title becomes I will for the purposes of the mashup. Let's send it to Picky to see who goes first.
We will start with Tara.
First one to Tara, this is a 1959 show. It's a comedy take on Claudius' second wife, who gets up to all sorts of nonsense with her friend, Ithelia Mertzius.
I, Claudius, Love, Lucy.
All right, next to Sarah. This is a 2019 show. The Emperor has no time for cringe comedy and wants every sketch on this show to just be over with.
Oh, gosh. I, Claudius, think you should leave with Tim Robinson?
That is correct. To Dave, David Mitchell went to a very posh school and can always tell if Claudius is embellishing stories about his exploits or repeating them faithfully. But are we really supposed to believe that there was a fig painted with poison? That shows from 2007.
Oh, would I, Claudius, lie to you?
Correct. All right, back to Tara.
Yes.
It's a 1997 show. It's a movie adaptation which one of Claudius's wacky inventions makes Claudius Drusus, Claudia Antonia, and Britannicus tiny.
Honey, I, Claudius, shrunk the kids.
All right, to Sarah. 1997 show. This is a cringy sitcom in which Claudius has to reinvent himself by hosting a late-night radio show after being dunked by his wife and dropped by the Britannia Broadcasting Corp.
And I, Claudius, should know. Just kidding. I need a hint, please.
This show stars Steve Coogan.
I don't know. Someone should steel mill that.
Steel mill?
Yeah, you got two steel mills, dude.
Wait, can you repeat the clue now that I've already spent a steel mill?
It's a 1997 cringy sitcom in which Claudius has to reinvent himself by hosting a late-night radio show after being dumped by his wife and dropped by the Britannia Broadcasting Corp.
Okay.
Starring Steve Coogan.
Yeah, okay. God, it's been a... Okay. I'm Claudius Alan Partridge.
He said no contractions.
Oh, no contractions. Okay.
So break the...
the exasperation in everybody's face. I, Claudius, am Alan Partridge. Thank you.
All right. Now it's Dave's actual question. This is a 2022 show. See, Claudius has always been a little sickly, so it's okay that he stretches the truth a bit to get a coveted spot on a home shopping channel, right?
Oh, boy.
A show I know you have watched.
2022.
I watched one episode. I don't think he watched it with me.
Oh, okay.
Okay, one more time, please, with the clue.
2022 show, Claudius has always been a little sickly, so it's okay that he stretches the truth a bit to get a coveted spot on a home shopping channel, right?
I'll take the clue, but it doesn't ring a bell.
The show stars Molly Shannon.
Ooh. No, I have to pass on this one. Don't know.
Okay, no, steel mills, that show is I Love That For You, so that is I, Claudius, Love That For You. All right, back to the top with Tara.
Yes.
This 2020 show. As a Julio-Claudian, Claudius knows all about twisted family trees, and he uses his knowledge of genetics and genealogy to solve the case of the Golden State Killer.
What the fuck was this called? I, Claudius, will be home in the dark?
Oh, so close, so close.
Steel meal.
Yeah, no kidding.
Do I get the full three?
You would get, in fact, get the full three.
All right, I, Claudius, will be gone in the dark.
Well stolen. We're all tied up, by the way.
So close. Mm.
No, I don't think so, because Dave only got one point on his steel mill.
Oh.
So I've got six to four.
Okay, thank you.
Same.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dan.
All right, so to Sarah, 2020, this is a 2020 show. In a watershed show for ethnic representation, Claudius is unexpectedly relocated to the San Fernando Valley and struggles to reinvent himself in his last 3 years of high school.
Hint.
Starring, a name I am going to butcher, it is Maitreyi Ramakrishnan.
I don't know. I'm going to be bad, too.
The show is Never Have I Ever, so it would be Never Have I, Claudius, Ever.
Yeah, it was just out of reach.
Mm.
Okay, so we are back to Dave. Dave, 2020 show.
Mm-hmm.
Claudius is drafted to judge on a singing competition show in which he has to somehow decide who's a good singer by watching them lip sync.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, I'll take the hint, but I don't think it's going to help me.
Cast of the show includes Ken Jeong.
It's no help. He's in every show.
Yeah. Must be Tuesday. I, Claudius, listen to you sing.
You're so close.
It's called I, Claudius, Can See Your Voice.
Fuck me. That was close in a weird way.
That's yes, real.
It was.
This is the energy that goes into naming our TV shows.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. One more for each player until we get our first score break. So we're back up to Tara.
Yes.
This is a 1991 show. After I, Claudius, is canceled, Claudius takes his whole Julio-Claudian clan into sitcom family protection, where they keep encountering the stars of old shows.
Oh, God. This is a Dan special. And I certainly can't remember what it was actually called. If I get this right, it is truly just from quiz show osmosis. Is this Honey, I, Claudius, Am Home?
Wow.
Yes.
Well played, everyone.
Honey, I, Claudius, Am Home. I was hoping someone would take the hint because the children of that show include a young Julie Benz. Oh. Something I just found out.
Hmm.
All right. Sarah, 2007 mm-hmm. show. In a new low, Claudius competes to date a woman that Flavorius Flavius repeatedly rejected.
Fuck. Claudius Love New York? Oh my God.
Nice.
Why?
Dave, last one going in the score break. This is a 2022 show. The future emperor is 16, and when he's at the family's villa on the beach, he finds that the other kids suddenly ignore his limp and his slight deafness and think he's pretty cute.
Oh.
Yeah. Triggering something in my brain, but... give me the hint. Damn it.
Stars Lola Tung.
Oh, that helps. I feel like I know what the show is, but I don't. I can't pull it.
All right, that show is The Summer I Turned Pretty. This is The Summer I, Claudius, Turned Pretty.
Update.
All right.
No. Would have not been able to pull that.
All right. So our scores right now going the first score break. Tara has 9. Sarah also has 9. Dave has 4 points. That means he gets to play in the Equalizer Challenge.
Right.
So
woo.
Now, of course, Dave has these great decks. I don't have those decks of TV cards, so we have to go with some other trivia cards. So,
great.
Dave, I'm going to give you a choice of 3 different decks of trivia cards.
All right.
They're all multiple choice.
Yeah.
Your choices are Mythology, Canada,
uh-huh.
or the United States South. This is a this is a set called Bless Your Heart from the editors of Garden and Gun.
Oh my God.
Oh man.
I can't believe the president cards are not an option.
That qualifies everything. Well, I mean, I guess I have to go for the Canada one after those ones, but I do remember I think you've used these on a live trivia event before and they were sort of maddening, but let's do it anyways.
Yeah, okay. So, Dave, so I'll give you 4 questions. If you get all 4, you'll get 6 points. You get 2 out of the 4, you'll get 3.
All right. I like those odds.
Here we go.
All right.
So, Dave.
Yep.
What type of pizza was invented in Chatham, Ontario?
Hawaiian.
Neapolitan? Romana, Hawaiian, or margarita?
All right.
So that's one correct.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't realize it was multiple choice.
Nice.
Multiple choice. All right. Dave, former Saskatchewan Premier Tommy Douglas.
Yeah.
Is the grandfather of what actor? George Clooney, Kiefer Sutherland, Jim Carrey, or Michael Douglas?
Sutherland.
Woo!
2, you got your 3 points.
Halfway there!
All right, Dave. Okay. As of 2019, what is the lowest temperature ever recorded in Canada?
Ooh.
Is it minus 53 Celsius, minus 57 Decius, minus... I think they mean Celsius. Minus 53 Celsius, minus 57 Celsius, minus 63 Celsius, or minus 65 Celsius.
53, 57, 63, 65.
Yes.
All negative. Well, this is a random crapshoot, so I'm going to go with the one with the spelling mistake. 57 Celsius.
Oh, no!
All right. So, Dave, you get 3 points. And,
all right, I'll take it.
Well done.
Yeah, all right.
Nice.
All right, so... Right now, so it scores after that. Tara and Sarah tied with 9. Dave within striking distance at 7 points.
Okay. All right.
Tasty.
Delcius.
Tasty, like a Hawaiian pizza, said nobody.
I had it in Saskatchewan on Friday.
More for you.
I love them. All right. Tara, this is a 1965 show.
Yep.
Claudius is supposed to be the paragon of Roman morality and family ethics, but that all gets thrown into the air when he frees a long-entrapped ancient magical spirit in a midriff-bearing outfit.
I, Claudius, dream of Genie.
Sure.
Who doesn't?
Nobody does.
So, Sarah, this is a 1952 show. Claudius, in a celebrity panel, try and guess a surprising fact about a seemingly normal Roman citizen.
Could I hear the clue again to stall for time?
Sure. 1952 Please. Show. Claudius and a celebrity panel try and guess a surprising fact about a seemingly normal Roman citizen.
Okay, continuing to stall by asking for a hint now.
Sure, this was hosted in some years by Steve Allen.
Oh, yeah. I, Claudius, have a secret?
Hey.
Oh, really?
I've got a secret, yes. With hosted by Steve Allen, the number five show in the 1957-58 TV season.
Good for them.
All right. To Dave, this is a 2020 show. After the publication of Chronicles of a Fed-Up Millennial Roman, Claudius becomes an unlikely generational symbol, but can't remember what happened to him on one fateful night.
Oh, boy.
One more time with the clue, please, Dan.
Sure, 2020 show. After the publication of Chronicles of a Fed-Up Millennial Roman, Claudius becomes an unlikely generational symbol, but can't remember what happened to him on one fateful night.
Yeah, this is vaguely familiar, but I don't think I watched it, so I guess I'll take the hint. Hopefully we'll get a...
Stars Michaela Cole.
Oh. I, Claudius, may destroy you.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. First time the hint's actually been useful. All right, back to Tara.
Yes.
2017 show. Claudius goes to Marfa on vacation and becomes enamored with a charismatic professor.
I, Claudius, love dick.
Yes, he does. this is question 17.
Spread eagle.
Spread eagle.
Oh, the spread eagle is.
The spread eagle banner.
I thought it's actually the spread Aquilinius. Anyway.
This is a 2015 show to Sarah. It's a PBS travel food series in which Claudius shows the producer of Everybody Loves Raymond the culinary delights of Italy.
Eat, pray, Claudius. Hint?
It's a good hint. Stars Philip Rosenthal.
Nope. Someone steal it.
I only remember what the follow-up show is called that's on Netflix now.
No. It's good hint because the name of the show is I'll Have What Phil's Having, so it's that's I, Claudius, it. Will Have What Phil's Having. Mm,
sure.
All right, to Dave.
Yeah.
So 2020 show. Claudius was eventually venerated as a god, but in this coming-of-age story, Claudius discovers that he actually has godlike telekinetic powers.
Hmm. Benson becomes god. Telekinetic powers? Where were you in 2020, Dave?
At home.
Were you watching the show?
I hope.
Well, I'll take the hint, please.
Stars Sophia Lillis.
Don't know who that is.
A teenage actor you would not know.
Claudius. Very popular. With the kiss.
I, Claudius? Just kidding.
It's called I, Claudius, Am Not Okay With This.
That's it.
Going to question 19.
No,
19.
All right. Tara, this is a 2019 show. Claudius and nine other strangers wake up on a strange isle with no idea of how they got there. Dark secrets, nature of reality, etc.
Etc. Hint. Is Latin.
Hint, please.
Sure is.
Show stars Kate Bosworth.
The other boss.
And this was a show on television. I don't know what this is.
The name of the show was The I Land. And so this is, of course, The I Claudius Land. Turns out it was all a virtual reality prison in Texas.
Oh, great.
Jesus.
Sarah, this is a 2022 show. the kid-friendly space adventures of Claudius, taking over a role from an animated Marvel alien. Kid-friendly space adventures of Claudius taking over a role from an animated Marvel alien.
Animated Marvel alien. Hint.
The original show stars Vin Diesel.
The I, Claudius Ren Giant.
Provisional steel mail. What's the score?
Dave has 8, Sarah has 12, Tara has 15.
Am I like anywhere near contention? I'm probably not, right?
I only have 10.
I was going to say.
Oh, it's just a meal anyway, so fuck it. I'll take it. Steel mail.
Go for it.
I, Claudius M. Groot.
Oh.
So I have got 8, 13, 15. Is that what everyone else has?
9,
it's
10, 15.
9, 10, 15.
Where we're going. Okay, you're saying 9, 10, 15. I will believe you. Okay.
Sounds like it doesn't.
That sound like that.
Sounds like he has reservations.
All right. Okay, so we are on to Dave. Here we go, Dave. It's a 2009 show. Based on the 1999 movie, Claudius and the Stratford sisters navigate the romantic landscape of Padua High and an enemies to lovers arc.
The fuck? Based on a 1999 movie... All that
Claudius
stuff.
And the Stratford sisters
navigate
the romantic landscape of Padua High and an enemies to lovers arc. The movie. Children like the enemies to lovers arc is my understanding.
All right. I have no idea if this tracks year-wise. 10 things I, Claudius, hate about you.
Holy shit.
Wow. Dave.
Whew.
Not even right. I watched that show, and I will watch some shit.
That's true. I can't confirm.
Speaking of some shit, Tara, this is a 1991 show. It's a period drama in which Claudius works as a housekeeper for a DA and becomes increasingly involved in the civil rights movement.
I, Claudius, will fly away.
All right. Almost the score break. This might be my favorite one. This is to Sarah. This is from 1996 or 2016.
Mm.
You see, Claudius is romantically interested in someone who might be a killer, and Antonia the Younger gets involved when she finds out about the potential partner's past. And just for context, Antonia the Younger, of course, is Claudius's mother.
Yeah, you don't.
Duh.
I mean... I got to start racking up some points, so... I mean, no, that's not possible. No, I got to take the hint.
The version star Tori Spelling and Layla George.
I, Claudius, know what you did last summer? I don't know.
Is this the... I know I'm out of steel meals, but this is Mother May I, Claudius, Sleep with Danger?
Yes. Oh, right. Fuck.
All right.
Sorry, Tori.
Last one before store break. So to Dave. 2019 show. Like so many others before him, Claudius comes to believe that his grandfather, Tiberius Claudius Nero, might have been the Black Dahlia killer.
Oh, shit. Tara trying to make me watch this. And I don't think I did. And now I regret it. Chris Pine.
Yes. Yep. The internet's current favorite Chris.
Did you see... Yeah.
He's looking great. Legit. I don't care what anyone says.
Did you smell my Star Trek synapse fry when I tried to figure out what the name was there?
Yes.
Christopher Pike. You know who I'm talking about. Fuck. I, Claudius, am the knight.
Fuck me.
Wow.
All right. So go ahead and score.
I can't believe you pulled that. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I barely remember that, and I recapped
That was Dan calling for a score break.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm in the lead with 18. Dave barely behind with 15. Ooh. Sarah is going to be playing the equalizer challenge zone,
oh,
challenge with 10 points.
All right. All right. So, Sarah, same choices. Your choices are Mythology, Canada, or the U.S. South from the editors of Garden and Gun magazine.
Bless their hearts. Are these all multiple choice or only the Canadian one? Mythology, please.
All right, here we go.
Come on.
Thanks.
Pan, the goat-like nature god, is the son of a nymph and what swift-traveling Greek deity? Apollo, Hermes, Atlas, or Obelisk?
What were the first two?
Apollo, Hermes, Atlas, and Obelisk.
Hermes.
What science fiction TV series about a war between humans and robots features characters and place names inspired by Greek mythology?
The choices?
Yeah. So your choices are Lost, Stargate, Battlestar Galactica, or Black Mirror.
Battlestar?
Woo!
Okay, that's 3 points. Let's see if you can go for the full six. What is the name of the Greek hero Jason's ship on which he sails in search of the Golden Fleece? The Perdwin, the Mysia, the Leopard, or the Argo?
Or the Pussy Wagon.
The Argo.
Oh.
The Pussy Wagon.
Or the what?
The Golden the pussy wagon.
Pussy Chariot.
This one's for all the marbles. The Colossus of Rhodes, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, depicted what Greek titan / sun god? Boudica, Helios, Zeus, or Kronos?
What's the first one again?
Boudica.
I don't actually know this.
Boudica, Helios, Zeus, or Kronos?
Sun god.
Sun god. Kronos.
Sorry, it was in fact Helios. So 3 points.
Good for him.
But that does make things tighter. Sarah now has 13, Dave 15, and Tara is in the lead with 18.
Oh,
two questions left. Here we go.
Okay, all right. Blow it, Tara.
All right.
No, swing, but,
Wanda Vi Claudius.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
This is a 2017 show. It's okay. A period piece in which Claudius mentors young comedians hoping to make it big and wind up on Jonas Carsonius.
Uh-huh. I, Claudius, am dying up here.
Nice. That show.
Nice.
All right. All right. To Sarah. This is a 2021 show. Some Roman teens kill a guy in a chariot accident and think they've gotten away with it, but the emperor sees everything and a year later starts meting out consequences.
Is this I, Claudius, know what you did last summer-is? Yay!
All right. To Dave.
Yep.
2022 show.
Mm-hmm.
Hopeless romantic Claudius hangs out with friends in a bar, but in the frame story, he sounds a lot like Kim Cattrall.
One more time, please.
All right. 2022 show. Hopeless romantic Claudius hangs out with his friends in a bar, but in the frame story, he sounds a lot like Kim Cattrall.
If you tell me Kim Cattrall, if I ask for the hint, I was going to be trouble. I would like a hint, please.
All right, your hint is Hilary Duff.
Oh.
We did watch this show.
Hilary Duff?
Mm-hmm.
Like the beer?
She got off her duff and did the show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. How I, Claudius, Met Your Father.
Right. That is correct.
Dang.
All right. So now we're last question for everybody. This is Tara.
Okay.
2002 show. Responsible Claudius has to take in his vivacious teenage sister in New York when their father has to live in another country for work.
What I, Claudius, like about you.
Wow. Oh, that's a poll.
Not really. Watched it for the again with this Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. To Sarah, this is a 2020 show. It's a mini-series in which Claudius has to deal with his twin brother's schizophrenia.
Fuck.
Say the wrong thing. Say the wrong thing.
I mean, this could go a lot of great ways for Dave. I, Claudius, oh my god. I, Claudius, know this much is true.
That's not Edison. She did it.
That was a high level of difficulty. I don't even know if I would have gotten right, frankly.
All right, Dave, last question.
All right, these things I, Claudius, believe.
Yes, that was what I was about to say. Sarah Point.
All right, yeah, sorry, Dave.
So here you go, Dave. Last question, regulation. 2002, it's a reality competition series in which Claudius is stranded on an island with washed-up actors, footballers' wives, and somebody who used to be on EastEnders.
Oh, okay. British. Yeah. What's it called? Is it called... No, fuck, I don't remember what it's called. I know some of the words in it, but I don't know where it goes in the word salad. Oh, wait a sec. Shit. All right, I don't think this is right. Is it Help, I, Claudius, am a Celebrity? Get me out of here?
Oh, so close. Oh. No, sorry, it's just I, Claudius, am a Celebrity, get me out of here. No help in there, indeed.
No, that was me saying help to the... No, that was... You misunderstood, Dan. That was B.
Help, comma.
It was my little prayer. It was a religious moment. So I think we should give Dave that point.
We should definitely give Dave that point. You're all absolutely right. Because it does not matter.
All right. Not.
All right, that means our final scores are... Dave and Sarah tied with 19. Our winner, 24 points. It's Tara.
Tara!
Tara! Tara!
All right. So we do have, I do have a tiebreaker just for shits and giggles. And the way this works is I'm going to describe the IMDb page of my favorite actor from I, Claudius. And the first person to shout out the name of the actor wins.
Oh, dear.
Brian Blessed.
Dave wins.
Yes!
Is that for a steel meal for the next valued guest?
Give me something, Dan. Yeah. All right.
That's a steel meal for the valued guest.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Gorgeous.
Well, that's what years of doing a quiz show together get you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves the Hawk guy. Well, guys, that is it for Lovejoy. Hey, Lovejoy. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We investigated the Sandman-adjacent supernatural mystery series, Dead Boy Detectives, before going around the dial with stops at Hacks, This Old House, and Baby Reindeer. Jessica's canon pitch for The Walking Dead needed one more to complete the Robert hat trick, but got in nonetheless. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner. Thumbs down from Sarah on the Robert hat trick joke. This week's game time from Mr. Dan Casino. Next up is the contestant on this weekend's Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
Because you see, in the episode, there was two Robert Patricks, and when you get one more, it's a Robert hat trick. I am David T. Cullen, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta.
Honey, I'm home.
Sarah D. Bunting.
You weren't always like this. None of us were.
And Dr. Dan Casino.
Wet squelching sound.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
We don't have time to sit.
I didn't ask if you have time to sit. I said sit.